Welcome to Full Metal RPG, the tabletop role-playing game show that still is looking for that rare copy of Shadowrun First Edition that cares about class. I'm Richie Buzzkill, and today I have Noland with me, as usual. What's up,
Hello, folks.
Noland? And we have a special guest. We have Stu Horvath from Vintage RPG fame. What's up,
Hello.
Stu?
Nothing. It's Sunday morning. I'm chilling.
Oh yeah. Well, you have such a the camera has now started to work again. So check out the YouTube show if you want to see the Stu's excellent record player and his wife's jade plant growing in the background. It's a very zen look. It could be a trip hop YouTube loop for 10 hours. So
I like it. Yeah, no. I'm not even I'm about a third of my way through my first cup of coffee. So forgive me if I seem slow or stupid.
Yeah. Coffee is definitely the beverage of choice as opposed to the beer. We usually do these in the middle of the night.
Right. Yes. I already consumed my first cup of tea, so I'm trying to keep some energy up. Because it's way earlier for me than it is for any of you, because I'm in Arizona. The only sane thing about it is no daylight savings time.
Oh, gosh. So are you two, 3 hours ahead? 2 hours ahead?
Three.
Three, yeah.
So it is 7:11 in the morning, everybody.
Ooh, sorry.
It's all right. I'm just going to do traffic on the 10s. So I just did traffic already. So Stu, you are, I think, most famous for, well, two things. One, for
famous,
playing your Instagram a decade in advance, and having a amazing collection of RPGs.
Why, thank you. It's not a Oh man, you want to talk about Instagram?
Yeah.
Jeez. So angry with Instagram right now. It's
Please bring the Instagram heat.
It's so broken. And like last year, it broke and it stopped showing my stuff. I have like a large number of followers and it's nice and they used to engage and now they don't because they don't see my stuff. And like that engagement was basically like cut to a fraction last year and I got used to it. I was like, cares about the likes, it doesn't matter. But now I'm getting like all of a sudden at the same time, you know, April, like no engagement. Like I was posting Dungeons and Dragons stuff and getting like no engagement. I'm just like, why am I doing this? Like I just wanted people to read the thing.
Yeah,
and it won't cooperate. It's a video platform now. It's awful.
Well, I mean, that's, yeah, it's mostly short form video, but it's also like let's be honest, Full Metal RPG has been sort of shadow banned from Instagram and Facebook, most other places for our random takes being placed up. So, you know, social media is a hellscape and, you know, they get you hooked in and then they want you to engage and then no one engages. And it sort of like feels like this, like, why am I doing?
I feel like I'm petitioning like invisible spirits and like changing my behavior in ways that I hope, you know, like in magical thinking will like appease the God algorithm. And it's stupid. It's just like they tease you by having like this big number of followers, but then they just halt. They keep you in social media prison. It's crazy.
Well, I mean, I did sort of break on YouTube, the last video sort of broken out in the algorithm, mostly because of the clickbait title I put on it. And that was the only thing that's like has ever burst into the you know, more than 100 views was like because I put a, hey, so D&D is being ruined by lore, everybody. Hey, look at me. I'm playing the game. Oh, I don't want to play this game.
Playing the game, it's terrible because it's just so disingenuous. Either you believe that dreck and like you have to talk to it in sincerity, or you know, you have to use that as like as the hook, and then you could be your real self and put together your put out your real ideas. And neither of those things appeals to me at all. So I don't know. I'm looking at newsletters and stuff. We might the joke about the I mean, it's nice that I have it all planned out and I have like that really long runway to kind of fiddle with the system. But the Instagram might be dialing back.
Yes. And that's unfortunate, but everyone has told me that the newsletter is the way to go because at least the email algorithms don't change as often as everything else. But I'm too lazy to actually write anything, and I like to improvise this show. So, as you know, knowing how much notes I gave you, which is none. The Instagram comes from you having this love for RPGs and collecting a lot of RPGs, which is collecting RPGs is sort of what we're going to talk about today, this morning. So I want to ask both all of us, how did you start collecting? I'll start with Stu because we're on Stu. How did you start collecting RPGs? What sparked that collection started? So
even back in like when I was a kid, like I was interested in them broadly and would find something like Call of Cthulhu and would just want as much of it as possible to read and appreciate the art in. So in a certain way, I've always been kind of a collector, but I found much more terrible ways to do it because of the internet. There was just... I was like poking around one day looking to replace something that I had sold or got lost in a flood. And I found all this stuff that I just didn't know existed, primarily Chaosium box sets. And I was just like, well, I need all of those. I just do. Like my life is, I thought my life was full and complete, but it isn't any longer. And it won't be until I get those boxes. So I did, I got all those boxes. And then I just kept going. I was just like, well, I really like Chaosium, so I'm just going to get everything that they produced because that's a rational thing to do.
Well, you've got to have all the tools for the toolbox, right? You got to have every single, no matter how big or small piece of the toolbox. So you can run the perfect Call of Cthulhu game.
The best part, like I don't even use rules really. Like we use the framework in a Call of Cthulhu game, but like when combat happens, I'm on the fly every single time. Like rules. What do we use those for? Yeah, and it basically just started like that. Once I realized what was out there, I also got around the same time I was buying the Call of Cthulhu stuff up. I got a random. I don't know if I bought a small collection or somebody was like leaving it on their porch because they were moving. And it was just like a random box of RPG books, but they were so odd. Like there was All Stars of Wrestling was in there. The Diablo D&D version was in there. And I was just like, this is so delightfully stupid. Like, is there more of this? And then I found, you know, all the weird licensed stuff from the 90s, and then it was just an exponential thing. The more I looked, the more I found things that were worth hunting down and checking out, and now I have far too many things.
Nolan, how did you start collecting again?
In some sense, I was collecting since I started role-playing. Like every time we play something, I keep the book, and you know, I had a medium collection, right? Anytime one of my friends would say, hey, let's play White Wolf, whatever, I'd get a couple White Wolf books and make sure I had what I needed to play, right? And so things built up slowly over the years that way. And then kind of during the pandemic era, I kind of got into D&D history, read like all the John Peterson books, and also kind of, you know, you can't go out, see a show or anything. So I also kind of get, look at all these. Oh, there's this Arcanum thing. There's all these kind of old books and stuff I could maybe have. Like, maybe I'll pick up one or two here. And, you know, all of a sudden I've got a small collection here of things that I didn't really play. Because for the longest time, you know, my collection was literally just everything I had actually played. Because I usually didn't think it was worth investing in something if one of my friends wasn't going to run it. So I have somewhat larger percentage of my games on my shelf here actually played than maybe other people, but Yeah, I guess that's how I started. And I don't know, maybe is this an intervention? Do I have to admit that I have a problem?
No, not if I'm here.
Yeah, we'll talk about Stu's collection and know why you're not the intervention in this particular. I think, and to some extent, I think Nolan has the same thing. Is my family has a bit of a collector problem in the fact that I would call my father a high functioning hoarder. In the fact that he actually collects things, and then a portion of his collection he actually makes money from, which is he collects big metal objects and then makes, he's a machinist and welder, and he makes things out of the some of the metal objects that he collects. And so I have to prevent myself from basically papering every wall in this house with RPG books. But really it started with the two games that I loved from the 90s that I played a lot, which was Cyberpunk 2020 and West End Star Wars. West End Star Wars being the first game I ever played. So of course I needed to pick up every time I saw one, I would pick it up. Fortunately, I haven't gotten into looking online for things that I may or may not need, and I only have a spreadsheet for the Cyberpunk 2020 stuff because I kept buying doubles.
It's a curse.
Well, I'm just happy to learn that your family like uses the stuff they hoard.
Yeah, that's that is an upside of it. We have to be functional. It has to have some function. Unfortunately, as people watching the video can see, this is part of my collection. Some of it's in the closet, some of it's in the hallway, but like all the books are now stacked on top of other books. So It's probably time to start, culling a little bit. And that's a painful subject for later. Stu, you have like do you have a philosophy, or are you just kind of like, I want everything?
I used to sort of, it's changed over time. I was very much into the Call of Cthulhu, the Chaosium stuff, because I really genuinely like their products. They're just on my wavelength. That I have a lot of D&D stuff because that was, you know, everybody has a lot of D&D stuff. Like, it's inescapable. It changes. My focus changes. Like, I had an opportunity to buy basically every Traveler book a couple years ago, and I leapt at it because I love Traveler. And now I'm in the process of deciding how much of that I want to keep, which is not that much. Not because it's bad, just because, like, you know, space concerns and stuff. So my philosophy early on was to sort of be a single copy repository, to let that be like you just get one copy of everything that you're interested in, and you kind of use that as like an archive to make sense for the book. Now that the book's out, a lot of stuff just doesn't seem as important to keep anymore. So I'm in the process of trying to figure out what to get rid of.
And this is sort of what shocked me into actually, reaching out, is like the, you know, having a big collection and then culling it down is a whole, like, I've done it every time I've moved, because I rented for a long time and now I've bought, but I'm thinking about moving again. You know, this is a lot of weight. These books are not light. And I'm getting old. So
the key to books is you got to put them in small boxes or bags. Don't
like a banker box. That's usually my unit of measure, is a banker box, like the
storage unit and my magazines are all in banker boxes. And they are sort of the perfect amount of weight and size.
Yeah,
and they
even stack filled nice. Completely with paper there.
Yeah.
So yeah, I usually like And my more modern collection is all these indie RPGs that I love the strange and the weird RPG. So, and thus why I do this show. And so that's it. It gets even more interesting because those books are half size. So it's like, well, a full banker box of those, and then you gotta like turn them sideways. Anyways,
it's like Tetris.
Yeah, you gotta try and maximize what's in the box. But yeah, I and now these bookstores no longer take my weird books, so I've gotten so esoteric they don't care.
Really? Jeez.
Yeah. The local bookstores don't want like half of the books I take to them.
Wow. See, I wish you could just ship them this way, because like you said that you're not on the internet looking for stuff. If I wasn't on the internet looking for stuff, I wouldn't be able to find anything. There's just not the, and that's true of like records and regular books too. This area is just so picked over because of the proximity of New York, I think, that like everything kind of just goes into the city. And then gets priced high. So like there isn't a really good secondhand market in Jersey. I visited a friend in Pittsburgh and they had like all these half price bookstores, and I was just like, this is great. You know, all this stuff that like was just around, but there aren't even stores for it, really. There's not a ton of secondhand bookstores even. It really stinks. So if Arizona has a whole bunch, good for Arizona. That's two good things.
Yeah, two good things. We have Bookman's and Zia Records. They both have Bookman's has a much larger RPG section, and it used to be this like Shangri-La where you could go and find really weird stuff for very little money. Like they would just price it like, oh, it's $10-$12 or whatever. Then they found eBay.
Yeah.
And now we'll post things at basically eBay prices for things that have sold on eBay, which at least it's the stuff that sold and not just the speculators on eBay.
Yeah. But even still, like there's so much, having bought and sold so much of this stuff, like eBay is ridiculous.
Oh, it is.
I like it when I can get an eBay price out of somebody, but I don't usually try and do that.
Well, yeah, if you're trying to sell and it sells for that price, so you're like, oh, I should have asked for more money. But there is this kind of like cycle in a collection, right? You kind of gets big and then you're like, well, I now can't walk around in here. Which I've definitely had, where I've had stacks of books. You know, my microphone is hiding more stacks of books over here. So I guess it's an intervention for me and not Stu. I don't.
Well, I mean, I've always been so. Aside of the couple books that I have on my desk for my ongoing games, I don't have any role playing games in the house. It's all in the garage / the clubhouse, the six boxes that are left in the storage space that's used for other stuff. It's not just role-playing games. So I've always been one of my constraints has always been like, it can't spill over. Like it can't, like it's always got to be on shelves or neatly put away. Because that way lies madness. So my wife Daisy is a librarian, and she, like over the course of our relationship, I've really come to appreciate the need for a library to be weeded. And like initially, you know, like weeding, like the idea of like libraries throwing away books, like it hurts me, because like some of the books that I loved at my, you know, my childhood library met that fate, and that stinks because they're really expensive on eBay now. But by weeding, you give, just like with a garden, you give your books, your collection, you know, space to grow, and you get to kind of redirect it, repurpose it, and make sure that everything is, that you're just not getting everything for the sake of getting everything. you know, you get a little bit of money for selling it off, and you have new space on the shelf, and you could fill it with new things. As long as you don't like immediately go back and buy what you just sold because you miss it so much, you gotta be smart about it. One of the reasons I'm in this is because I sold off all of my MERP stuff, Middle Earth Role Playing stuff, way back when, and to Noble Knight. And like 10 years later, I was just like, that was a very stupid decision. And now I have it all back at increased prices. And that hurt a little bit, but you know, you do what you gotta do. But yeah, it, by weeding, and like I've started weeding my collection, it immediately opened up space for new cool things, like more MERP, actually. I keep, somebody on our Discord bought a MERP module, and I was jealous because it's one I didn't have, so I went and bought it, and then now every time, when one arrives, I go on eBay, and I look for like the cheapest one to see if it's like cheap enough to buy, so I'm in like this weird cycle of buying MERP. But
yeah, I mean, like, I when I go through, I'll be like, and there you know, there are sacred parts of the collection that don't get weeded. Mm-hmm. and then I think it mostly ends up in a lot of the, to me, I start weeding, it starts getting into some of the newer stuff or a lot of the Kickstarter stuff, because I do think that, you know, that was a real boon to the size of my collection was when Kickstarter started. And then it's hard to have a connection to a game when you buy it 5 years before it shows up.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, Oh yeah, I bought this. Hmm. okay. All right. I'll put that on the shelf.
Yeah, I feel that.
Yeah, Noland, had to do any weeding, or your collection is still small enough that
it's still small enough to fit on like a shelf and a half. I mean, an IKEA shelf, a whole unit and a half, right? So it's not. I don't have an enormous collection, but yeah, I haven't done much weeding yet, and maybe that's somewhat due to kind of the way my collecting has gone over the years, right? Like, there's like, you know, there's a, you know, Vampire the Masquerade book here that, you know, it's a memento of that time in high school we would play like Vampire. Like, I haven't played Vampire fucking ever, but it's like, it's kind of this little memento of a moment in time. And I have a hard time, like, you know, the fun we had, and then I have a hard time like tossing those, and you know, it's like,
right. You still got quite a precious collection, because your current collecting is in the classic D&D 70s, 80s,
well,
era.
Yeah,
right?
I collected a lot of the early D&D stuff, just, you know, like Stu said, you know, single copy, like, just, you know, I'm not looking to get the world's perfect copy, but I do like to go back and read, like, you know, I only started playing D&D in like 92 or so. So I do like to go back and look like what D&D was before second edition, when I really started in, you know, I was interested in the history of it. And so I just picked up some of those. But as far as my collecting philosophy, right, I've kind of adopted more of a, and this is going to sound pretentious as fuck.
We're talking about collecting, so pretension exactly. Already went right out the window.
Yeah. But I like to like collect like what I consider like games that were like influential on game design, right? Like, you know, like the original like Apocalypse World, like games that kind of change things. You know, got a copy of like Amber Diceless. Look, mm-hmm. Somebody came with the idea that like, oh, you can, you know, do games without dice, you know, like all these kinds of, I like games that have kind of like, you know, where new ideas came into the system. You know, I got, you know, the old Ghostbusters game was great, you know, because like led to like Western Star Wars and like kind of first dice pool system. Like, there's all these kind of cool things that influenced future game design, or were just a cool, crazy idea that someone wanted to like inject in the world. And of course, so I also have a number of, you know, a number of books, like RBK said, from like the indie scene, right? The kind of like half size little things that came out of the Forge and all that. back in the day and are still being produced to some good effect, right? Yeah, so that's kind of been my philosophy, and what I've been trying to collect is things that are historically interesting, like, you know, all the old D&D stuff is, of course, also very, very, very tremendously influential on, right, game design, right? Totally. It started the whole thing, right?
This is I definitely share this, like part of the early days, like when I discovered the Ghostbusters game and saw how, like, crucial that was to all of the 90s, like, I think that was maybe the point. Which was early. That was after I was the feed started. It was sometime in 2017, but it was but that was maybe the moment that I knew that I was going to write a book about this, just because like it was so, like, holy crap, like, you could really chart mechanically how this thing, like, influenced everything that came after it for a while. It, like, totally dominated the market. And
yeah, and it's by a murderer's row of, like, amazing designers.
It's crazy. And yeah, and Star Wars comes right out of it. And then, you know, White Wolf and like everything. It's just wild. I also wanted to say that. Oh, crap. What did I want to say? I lost it. I guess I didn't want to say it.
All right. Fair enough. well, I guess, and Nolan kind of mentioned it. Does and this is a classic collector's conundrum, and I think this is an interesting question for RPGs, is, does condition matter? Because for the most part, like, if I see a book that is, like, well loved, an RPG book that is, like, well, like, broken in, like, I'm way more interested in that book than I am about the preciously perfect version of whatever I'm, you know, like, if I'm interested, I'm going to buy it, right? But, like, if you give me a choice between a perfect copy and a well-loved copy, I'm almost going to be more interested in the well-loved copy than I am with the perfect copy.
I'm 100% with you. I there's collectors who specialize in unopened product, and I don't understand them. It's like buying toys and keeping them in the package. It's like, it's a toy. Even if you're not going to play with it, it should be out. You should pose it. You should, like, these things, they're tools that we use. And if you're buying up tools, if you collect tools, you want the ones that are tried and true, right? Like the one that a carpenter used for 50 years and built houses with, instead of, like, the brand new one from Home Depot, because everybody can own that one, right? I have this one book. This just happened recently. My first edition of Snakepipe Hollow has a big black Sharpie on the front cover. Calvan the Sinister, like, the guy who wrote it, just wrote his, like, DM name on it, and it's in the book. And like, because it's my copy. Like, that's so my copy. Sick. And the name is so great, and it, like, speaks to an earlier era, and like. You know, a complete lack of preciousness about the actual book. And he's long been a mystery, but somebody reviewed the book and was just like, I love Calvin the Sinister. That's such a great name. And it reminded me. So I started looking around again, and I actually found him on a Facebook thing.
He's still using the same name.
Yeah.
Well, so, because if you have that good a name, you're going to use it, right?
Yeah. He's a Bay Area guy. And like, it was just like now suddenly I'm connected to this guy, and, like, the history of, like, he knew Dave Hargrave and like apprenticed under him a little bit, did some playtesting for Chaosium back in the day. And it's just like it's part, like, these are tools that were used, and it's cool to be able, and it's such a small pool of people that are using these tools that you can find these connections. And I think that's super important. As long as it's extant, like, you know, it's not missing pages, and, like, there aren't so many notes and highlights that it's impossible to read. I think that, like, the more used, the better. It's cheaper too.
Well, yeah. Nolan, what do you generally go for?
Yeah, I agree completely. Like, I love finding people's names in the front of books, and, you know,
yeah.
When I get, you know, I was putting together, you know, my Beckme boxes, right? And the different colored boxes for the old Dean Beckme set. And yeah, I was getting them with, you know, blown out corners, and I'm like, put a little glue in, you know.
Yeah. A little, you know, archival tape.
little archival tape, repair, do a little repair myself. Like, yeah, I, you know, it wasn't a precious, precious thing. You know, I'm not going to make an invisible repair at it and try and sell it back to somebody. You know, like, it's for me, right? It's like, I guess somebody will sell it when I die, but like,
The other treasure to me is finding a character sheet or five.
Ooh, yeah.
That's filled out with somebody's name, with somebody's character is in the book. That is like choice.
There's some people that will auction and buy. Like, I found, you know, I dug through this old D&D stuff and I found, you know, pages of, you know, grid paper with maps and some guy's campaign from 1982. Does anybody want to bid on crazy early D&D notes that are just like, I've seen these things go by on groups and people like, oh yeah, I'll bid on that. Like, weird.
So I've been doing this. I've been collecting like seriously for about 7 or 8 years. And I have accumulated so much of that stuff that it fills an entire banker box, like character sheets and like campaign notes that have just been like mixed in with stuff. And it's so awesome. It is a box of pure joy. And I always forget. I don't know what to do with it because like, it doesn't, I don't know. Like I have to, I honestly, getting off of Instagram might be great because like it'll kind of free what I think that I could do with the stuff that I have, because you know, you can't just post notes like that on Instagram because Instagram will just not care. A lot of times Instagram has dictated what I collect, and once it's on the Instagram, I can get rid of it, which goes back to the culling thing. But I'm rambling.
And you're the published author, so here's an idea for you. You could take the campaign stuff and the kind of like the esoterica you find the in the liner and kind of make something out of it. Like I could even see if you found somebody's campaign, if you were just, you wanted to publish something in the OSR space, just publishing some dude's campaign. It's very much an OSR move.
That's probably got some copyright issues, but yeah.
No, I mean, Tim Hutchins has collected some of this stuff and has put out those two books, neither of which, Hall of the Stone Giant King and then the one about dolphins. And it's basically just they're reprinted. The Stone Giant King is like legit 70s and 80s era like fan made stuff that he found and published, and they're great because like they have all of the crude sort of like that amateur art, and like they're terrible looking designs, but like they have all the heart and soul that like you want to see in that stuff, that's a great book. And there must be some mechanism, a way of doing it, or he wouldn't have done it. So
right. I mean, they might have found the person or the family and asked, like, hey, can I use this? And he's like, what, that shit I wrote like 30 years ago? I don't care. Like, and, you know, that's, yeah, there you would have to do a little research. But just like to me, that just even like taking pictures of people's character sheets, like I would love to see that on Instagram. That's the kind of stuff I want to see, is weird esoteric stuff.
Yeah.
And it just is not rewarded by, you know, so you have to kind of find it some other way, you know, whether it's some kind of a book about it, you know, like I get it. Like it's sort of hard to publish anything nowadays that isn't going to peak on some kind of somebody's algorithm. So,
yeah.
So I mean, related to my weird, collecting autobiographical collecting habits, amongst weird esoterica, like I also do collect my own like crap from over the years. I have my first D&D character in a box over here from like 1992, like, so that's kind of another weird thing you can collect, is your own like autobiographical esoterica, right?
I have a box of that stuff too.
Yeah, just what is it that the indie folks call it, like artifacts of play, right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I mean, a lot of my characters, especially my original characters, are shoved in these books. So when they, you know, when if they don't go on the Viking funeral pyre, as I requested in my will, then they get, you know, they will get sold to someone else, hopefully, and not just thrown in a dumpster. I will, you know, I will have order of precedence. If we cannot have open flames at the time, fine, sell it. Yeah, so I, you know, that's the thing that makes these like interesting artifacts. Like, I kind of go between it's an interesting artifact of play, like the indie guys say, and also just weird books. Like, you know, I don't really want to get into Heartbreakers. Like, that's just I don't need another copy of D&D that someone has reproduced lovingly but changed one thing, you know.
Yeah.
But if it's got something weird about it, but my stuff is mostly very modern. Like I had like a giant box of Marvel. Okay. So I asked questions of, the patrons. I'm going to get into it, but one of the patrons asked, like, what is the thing that you sold and or didn't buy that got away that you wish you still had?
Okay, so complicated answer, but this goes all the way back to my beginnings in the hobby. I had convinced my grandparents to buy me some D&D stuff, but it was random stuff at the mall because I didn't know what I was doing. So I had like all of this D&D stuff and didn't know how to play it or do anything with it. And none of my friends were really interested in figuring it out either. But we were getting into comic books at the time. And I went to a local bookstore called Daniel's Den. It was run by this cool little hippie, and they had the Satanic Bible on the shelf, and there was like the Blacklight heavy metal posters. It was a really cool shop. And they had the handbooks to the Marvel Universe for the TSR game. And they were loose leaf. And it was four volumes, and it was like a compendium of every freaking character in Marvel Comics at that time that I was just getting into. So it was basically like finding like the cheat sheet for the entire Marvel Universe. Snapped that up, loved it at the time, used that set of books to kind of figure out how to play role-playing games with my friends. Because like who would win in a fight, basically. And then we kind of extrapolated from there. I pitched all of the folders that they came in, put them in a big three-ring binder, and then that binder disappeared. And I hate that.
That's, you know what's funny? And I don't, and my answer is almost exactly yours. in the fact that I bought from my local game store, the original game store I used to go to, I bought a banker box full of Marvel superheroes, including three ring binders of all those cards. And then I sold it. So it's possible, unlikely, it is possible that I had your collection of Marvel superheroes.
Oh my God, that would strike to my heart.
Now, admittedly, this was in Indiana. So the likelihood that it traveled from New Jersey to Indiana and somehow got sold to me is very low, but it is non-zero. Was the binder blue?
No, it was a red binder. And it said baseball on the front in Sharpie, but I spelled it wrong initially. So it was B-A-C-E. And then you could see where I hooked the S in to correct it. It was very stupid. I've since replaced those, and I got them on the cheap, and it took a long time to get the outer folders. And now I have a nice set and I love them. But they aren't they aren't my set, and that is definitely a childhood loss. It really does affect me in like a weird way.
Spot. Anyways, Nolan, has anything got away from you? Is it?
Yeah, the thing I miss the most is, you know, it's very similar to Stu's story there, like. I do not own my original player's handbook from D&D second edition back in the day. You know, the guy, the crazy helmet on the front, you know, that one. At some point there was like a, you know, during all that playing, you know, with different groups and so forth in Indiana, There was some kind of switcheroo, and I have somebody else's.
The old switcheroo. I have a couple of my friends' books. I think I have my buddy Brian's DM's guide.
You know, all the books are on the table, right? And some at the end of the night, somebody picks up the wrong one, and I do not have the one that was my original. So I wish I had that. Maybe it's out there somewhere.
Yeah. It's weird. I played D&D so much, but I don't have that kind of that nostalgia for specific physical copies. Like I love Planescape, but I've replaced my Planescape box. That's one that I do care about condition, because I keep refining the condition. I find like a copy for $50. It's like, is it better? So mine's long gone, and I don't feel that same pang that I do for the Marvel Superheroes guide for whatever reason.
Yeah, I just, it was so much Marvel Superheroes that I was like, I'm never going to use this. And of course, Nolan ran a game of Marvel Superheroes. I mean, it was online, so I really...
Yeah, wouldn't. I ran some Phase Rip, like what, like it was 3-4 months ago?
Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. So I could have used the books instead of the terrible PDF copies that I was using.
Yeah.
So that to me is the, you know, eventually I will replace that. But I will try not to pay a lot of money for it, but it has gotten much more expensive than what I paid for it.
Yeah,
in the early
2000s. I feel like again, eBay is to blame. And if you look around on the Facebook groups, you should be able to buy like big lots of that for not that much. I feel like it's a game that like when people care about it, like they put it up on eBay, and when they don't care about it, there's like a box of it they don't want to deal with that they're willing to get rid of. Because I feel like somebody just did that on the Verpage Discord and got like a big pile of stuff that I was jealous about.
Yeah, I feel like your Discord would be a great place to trade and or talk about it anyways. So, but hey, you know, we have a Discord too, and you can come on and come trade your random weird stuff to me. And yeah, I will.
They're the buy sell trade channel.
Yeah, we do have that. So.
I have a spreadsheet going at the moment. If anybody's looking for anything, I have 900 items on it. I've sold 77, so it's actually like 850 ish.
Right. So this number. So Alan Barr, lovely designer Alan Barr, was like, "How many books do you have?"
Okay, let me get the spreadsheet up, because I keep track of it in a spreadsheet because I'm not a nerd at all.
I just estimate it by linear foot. So I just measured my shelves and the piles. And so I have something like 30 foot of RPG books. Something
I used to do it by the foot. I definitely had like something like 90 feet of Chaosium at one point. That was really funny. But I started to get I can only keep so much of it in my brain at a time. So I was starting to like accidentally buy things that I already had.
Yeah.
So I needed something online that I could consult easily. So I have not culled out the stuff that I've put up for sale from the list. So just know that there's probably, I don't know, 100 books less than what this number is. But just role playing books, boxes, and modules. I'm still scrolling. The number is 2,650 items.
Wow. That is very impressive.
That is impressive.
That does not include the 646 zines or the... Oh, God. 1,307 magazines. 218 board games, 247 game books, toys should not be that many, 163 toys, auxiliary books. So like I consider like they're not technically all role playing. There's just sort of like my regular books are just it's like fiction that seems like important or connected to role playing and my other pursuits. That this isn't all my books. This is just the books that I feel like are like part of the collection. Is 1,170, and then there's also 234 pieces of ephemera LPs and just other miscellaneous collectibles. It's a shit ton of stuff.
That's a lot.
It's a lot to even keep track of.
Yeah, no, it's a serious.
It sounds like you almost need an Access database instead of an Excel spreadsheet. And I push my glasses up right now as a nerd. Anyways,
the zines and magazines and stuff are interesting. I would love to collect some of that stuff because I think some of that stuff is the coolest stuff in the world. But I also feel like that way lies madness. Like if I started there, I would never come out of that hole. Right? There's so much weird, interesting stuff about people talking at the time about what they thought about games and like.
It is so cool. And thankfully, like I got almost all the Dragon magazines in one go for $50. Like if I was trying to, and that's sort of the story of all of the different magazines that I've, for the most part, like I just stumble into like somebody getting rid of like a giant box. Otherwise, like it's ridiculous. They cost too much. And like condition is actually kind of a problem with magazines, especially Dragon magazines. They fall apart like nobody's business. But yeah, like Different Worlds in particular, the Chaosium magazine from the 80s is such a great encapsulation of the industry as it was developing during that time. It was just people talking, and it's so cool, but like you could get lost for sure.
I mean, well, they used to make magazines cheap, right? That was the point of a magazine, was something you'd read and then throw away. And now there's everything is made at such a much higher quality that it's sort of like you're almost just buying a softback book, you know?
Yeah.
So it's not quite the same, you know, fun feel of like this, something that's, oh, you bought something that's should have been thrown away and now you've got it and you can tear through it and find interesting stuff. So, okay, so I'm going to do some, you know, more questions from the patrons here.
Sure.
What game has surprised you the most and how and why? What thing sticks out in your mind as something that you didn't expect or so forth and so on?
The Alien RPG from Free League is probably my go-to for this question. Because I kind of like the Alien franchise as a whole has started so strong, and from that position of strength has sunk to such lows of disappointment for me, that like I just, when the role-playing game was announced, I was just like, do we really need this? Like we're gonna try and parse the lore of Prometheus. That movie's terrible. Like but then, and of course that didn't stop me from buying it.
Right.
And then I try and in play that like in play, that game is fantastic. It's what it immediately went from one of the I thought that it was going to be a complete waste of time to one of my favorite horror role-playing game experiences. It's just so tight and like cinematic. It really undercuts claims that railroading is a bad thing in role-playing games, because it railroads in the right ways. That game is powerhouse, and every single supplement that's come out for it has been smart and interesting.
Yeah, I too think that was like a weird, it was like, wait, what? Because it seems like it'd be a, you know, you play the one scenario, right?
Yeah.
But it is the one scenario for the most part, but you have choices as the game master, and they've kind of, you know, you're not playing just against the xenomorphs, even though that's what you can do in different scenarios. And
yeah,
I like that I played a scenario at Gen Con that was basically ended up with us nuking the site from orbit, and so
nice.
Of course that's like the best ending of any.
But then they did it again with Blade Runner, and I was just sort of like, I had the same exact reaction. I was like, oh God, do I really? And I actually like Blade Runner like in toto more than I like the Alien franchise, because like there's only two movies and they didn't really screw up either of them. And I was just like, oh God, they're making that into a game. And then I bought it, even though I'm sort of lukewarm on it. And Blade Runner, I'm just sort of like, I don't get this one. So.
Well, so the thing about Blade Runner that I've sort of figured out, and I bought it as well, is that I think you need their modules unless you want to do a lot of work yourself.
Yeah, because that is definitely there's so much. There is no campaign option like an Alien. It's all cinematic, right?
Yeah. Well, it's one case is one box, but there's so much ephemera in mm-hmm. the box that you need to play the scenario that you to get up to their level of just the intro adventure.
Yeah.
You would have to produce a whole campaign, a whole box yourself.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of clues and going back and forth and clues. I think other mystery games make it easier. You know, Gumshoe and other things make it, and Brindlewood Bay and other things. But like this is very much like artifacts. Like here's this clue. Go ahead and look at it. You know, in that kind of old Chaosium box set way. But even more, just like you've got one case. It's all.
Yeah.
But I haven't got to really play it, but that's what I hear. But by examining the artifacts I have in hand, I'm like, yeah, to do my own case, because that's what I prefer to do, is design my own thing, is basically I should just sell it. I should just do the work and then just sell it. So last question from Morden Crimson is, what game has changed your opinion on most significantly over time, better or worse? Is that still Alien?
Yeah, probably. I think, well, no. Oh, God, it's got to be Dungeons and Dragons, right? Like in the big picture scope of everything, like I've changed my mind about Dungeons and Dragons so many times. Like, I hate it. I love it. You know, I think it's great. I I'm tired of all the new iterations of it, you know, indie and, you know, corporate, like, but I still like, I think in it, it's my language in a lot of ways. Like, yeah, my relationship with Dungeons and Dragons is thorny and up and down. And, I mean, I don't have anything like profound to say about it. I just think that like if I'm really being honest with myself, like I love and hate Dungeons and Dragons in equal measure. And I think that's the one.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I'm of a similar opinion, where it's like everything is based on it, and I want nothing to do with it, but yet I still play it every Friday night.
Yeah, I run it every week. I'm writing a campaign for it. Like, I just.
Well, speaking of D&D. Mike Marines asks, so since most of us start in D&D, and if you didn't start on D&D, please mention this. What was your second RPG you played if you started on D&D?
So I think that my first D&D, my first D&D, a Freudian slip that says so much. My first RPG products, as I said, were a smattering of basic and first edition D&D, but I didn't really figure out how to play role-playing games until I got Marvel Super Heroes. And then I think that we did finally put together a D&D game. So like it's those two pinging back and forth, are kind of tied for first. Second serious role-playing game is probably either Star Wars or Call of Cthulhu.
I mean, that's all hits. That's all bangers right there.
Yeah, no, I was lucky in my, you know, my history that the guys at the comic book store were good at guiding purchases. And I think that we just had lucky taste. Everything that we kind of played, we played Pendragon and Tales from the Floating Vagabond and Paranoia and Nightlife. Like we had like a bunch of like everything that we played was like a good game. We never, my high school up through high school, we didn't play anything that sucked, which was really nice.
Yeah, well, that would have been really easy or really hard in at the time, because it's for it to filter out, you know, like when you're just like the, you know, the Heartbreaker games and stuff, it's like they weren't published widely, so you'd have to like find them at a convention or like know it, that be your local guy's shop and you're like, oh, what is this? And they're like, oh, this is terrible.
Yeah.
Don't be so bold. Rifts existed.
Oh, that's right.
I never played Rifts back in the day.
Sorry. I sorry for the Rifts lovers out there. I have on Rifts.
I'm not sorry. No one's sorry.
We also played, Turtles a little bit. That was a fun game.
That's gotta be the best Palladium thing for my month.
I think, yeah, like easily.
So, okay. All right. Sardaukar 112 is what's your favorite FLG in your New Jersey NY area, you know, that you kind of haunt?
eBay. Yeah, I don't have a local I might, but like, I don't know. Like they seem to not survive very long here. And I don't know. I'm a hermit. I don't go out. It's easier to just have it shipped.
Fair enough.
I've never been to a real gaming convention yet. I'm going to Gen Con this year, but that'll be my first.
Oh, wow. That's a heck of a first gaming convention to go to. Like,
yeah. Diving in feet first.
Yeah. Head and feet first. It's a full cannonball. Like, just it's an experience, and you I'm hoping you bring an extra suitcase, because while the vendor hall is it's not a mosh pit, but it's more of like a slow moving morass, but it does contain a lot of weird and interesting things if you start looking in the corners.
There's also the auction.
Oh, so, god, no. I've heard about the auction. I'm not going to attend the auction.
Okay.
Smart man.
Maybe
smart
it is an man. Intervention. Yeah, okay.
No, I know my limits, gentlemen.
good.
What is your favorite or most inspiring RPG cover or marginalia you've seen? What is like the thing, you know, your vast collection?
That's a good one. Ah, there's so many. I've just been admiring, because I've been buying up the MERP stuff. Like, I laid them all out, and they're just a super handsome looking set of covers on those books. But the insides don't measure up, really. They're good, but like, it's a little dry. Those covers are just so good. Angus McBride was a fantastic artist, and then they have Daniel Horn on a couple. But the most inspiring, I feel like whatever I say is going to, I'm going to regret it, because I'm going to go have more coffee later and be like, oh no, it's that one. Crap. You know what it is? I know what it is. Again, this might be repetitive for people who are familiar with the work, but I got a birthday gift in 1985 or 1986. I got the Temple of Apshai trilogy video game. And I know it's a video game and not a role playing game, but it's still part of the collection. And I do still have the original, although I have replaced it with a nicer version. So I have two copies of that. But the cover art for that is sort of the perfect encapsulation of what I think a dungeon looks like. It's like this guy in like a funny helmet, like walking into like a sewer slash stone corridor, and there's just so many monsters. And like that image, more than a lot of Dungeons and Dragons art, kind of kept my momentum in the hobby. Just that game, that video game in general, was really important for just keeping me interested. And I think that would be the, like, I changed last year, or maybe the year before, the Instagram account logo is the Player's Handbook idol, right. And it has been forever. And I'm just so not like that D&D centric. I felt like that was a little bit of false advertising. So I changed it to the Temple of Apshai cover, and my engagement vanished. No one saw the account anymore.
Jeez.
And I, I don't know if that was like an algorithm thing, or if it was just like people were looking for the idol and they were missing it. But like it was like even worse than it is right now. It was like full panic. I was like, no one has seen anything, and then I realized, wait, I changed the icon, and as soon as I changed it back, it went back to normal. It's like, Jesus Christ.
Well, that is like when you're scrolling through, like, is this a fake account? Oh, that doesn't look right. I'm going to keep going and trying to, you know.
But this is
part of my esoterica, is I like to 3D print. So, of course, I can just make random plastic crack. But I have this actually has real rubies I put in the eyes.
Oh, wow.
Because eBay, you can buy rubies for very cheap. So I painted up. This is my painting of a 3D print, and I have it on my desk at all times. I'm not a huge D&D guy, but I dearly love the fact that the demon has been working out for the last 40 years. Just like ripped, just utterly ripped demon.
He's not going to let anybody else steal his eyes.
That's right. That's right. He got up, got that eye back, and he's like, this is never happening again.
It's like the Charles Atlas. Somebody kicked sand on him.
Yeah, somebody kicked sand in his ruby eyes, like, never again. And just freaking pumped iron for the last 40 years while no one was looking. Well, since we talked about the Instagram and the your vintage RPG podcast, which I'm fairly certain if you're subscribed to this show, you're subscribed to that show, but just go subscribe to Vintage RPG. It's a fantastic taste of the, you know, every Monday. Is there anything, you know, now, if you told yourself in 2017 you would change about the way you've done this in Vintage RPG land?
No, I mean, I think that I would caution myself about going all in on, I think I would have started the newsletter earlier. I think I think it's going to be a little bit of a pain in the butt to do it now. It would have been handy to have that newsletter email list ahead of the book launch for the direct marketing potential. But other than that, it's been a pretty cool ride. I don't have any complaints, really. Everybody I've talked to and met has been lovely and interesting and fun. And I recently was telling somebody that, like, I've only blocked, like, I don't know, 60 people on Instagram, and most of those are ad accounts. And they were just like, how? Like, there's so many assholes in this space. How? I was like, they don't asshole at me. Like, you know, everybody's chill. It's always been I felt like a really warm and welcoming hobby. I have no complaints. I wouldn't change a thing.
All right. Well, those are kind of the patron questions, and I'm glad that I asked them. I agree. You should go if you have. You started the newsletter already, right?
I figured out how to do it yesterday.
Okay. Well, the best time to plant a tree is today. So
yes,
or 30 years ago. Thank you very much, Stu, for being on and talking about your amazing collection and our group habit here.
Yeah, no, this was great. Thanks so much for having me. I had a blast.
Everyone should buy Stu's book also.
Yes.
Thank you. Yes.
Plug.
especially the deluxe version. I know it's more money.
Oh yeah.
But
you're a collector, you're gonna want
deluxe. You're gonna want both.
That's a good point.
there's a few more of the deluxe kicking around at the moment than the regular edition. So snap them up, sell them out. Come on.
Well, I mean, it's monsters, aliens, and holes in the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and other, by Stu Horvath. I know there's a subtitle in there, and I'm not going to get there. So,
A Guide to Tabletop Role Playing Games from Dungeons and Dragons to Mothership.
Perfection. You should have that taped on the outside of your monitor at this point.
It took a long time for me to be able to say it.
It's a long title.
It is.
But yes, pick up a copy, go listen to Vintage RPG. Thank you, Stu. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thank you, Stu and Nolan, for being with me on this early, early morning. I really had a good conversation, and there was something in there that I'm going to have to go back, because I think there's another, maybe not another conversation with Stu, but another episode with a topic he just dropped as a little piece of goodwill in there. So thank you, patrons, for your support and your questions. If you'd like to join us, patreon.com/FullMetalRPG or FullMetalRPG. There's a Patreon button on there. Oh, and the shirts are going away. New shirts are coming soon. I have a lot of things going on, so I will post those after some random life events are going to occur. So, thanks once again. Rock.